In 1970, 500,000 Americans were hospitalized for long-term psychiatric care. By 1990, that number had dropped by more than half. Initially, some of those people who had to leave the institutions landed on the street. But in the last decade or so, community services have been picking up some of the slack, and many state and private psychiatric hospitals are now seeing themselves not as permanent holding facilities, but as temporary sanctuaries. NPR's Joanne Silberner has this report on the philosophy behind changes in the treatment of the seriously mentally ill.
Walk into the TV lounge at Haverford State Hospital in Pennsylvania, and it looks just like you'd expect a state mental institution to look. A woman wails in the corner. About a dozen people stare blankly at the television. There's an unopened game of Monopoly on a table. But if you look further, you see other patients walking to psychiatric or occupational therapy classes, working out in the new gym, and taking classes in how to keep themselves clean and how to dress. There are 304 patients here with diseases ranging from paranoid schizophrenia to manic depression to multiple personality disorder. Virtually all are on some sort of drug treatment. Carlos has paranoid schizophrenia. He says he's been a lot of things in his life.
Ex-singer. Ex-writer, yeah. Ex-boxer, professional boxer, yeah. Ex-baseball player, ex-writer, lyric writers, music and lyrics. Yeah. Also, I could play pro basketball. I was good in all sports.
Carlos really used to be a professional boxer, and he's quite a big man. His illness led to a history of violence. He was jailed for assault. He used to attack patients and staff. Four aides used to have to hold him down for medication injections because he wouldn't swallow pills he was sure were poison. In fact, many older medications frequently cause side effects like tremors and stomach distress. But the hospital has new and better medications, and therapists who push patients to start living as close to a normal life as possible. Where three-quarters of the patients used to live on locked wards, it's now down to one-half. As for Carlos, he's on one of the new medications, and he asked for and got a job as a counterman at the hospital canteen, the Snack and Yak.
I'm the most famous man in the world, on Earth.
And what are you doing here today?
Incognito. I'm working in the canteen and the snack shop.
What do you recommend?
Chicken salad. We'll get some good chicken salad, chili.
Carlos has some way to go before he's ready for release. He doesn't want to leave.
If you weren't here, where would you be?
Living in the castle.
When Carlos came into the mental illness system nearly 30 years ago, it was going through dramatic changes. Horrendous conditions in state mental institutions, the civil rights movement, and the discovery of new drugs induced many institutions to begin discharging patients. Pennsylvania has gone farther than most states. In 1971, it had 22,000 people in state hospitals. Now it has 4,000. At first, many former patients had nowhere to live, no place to get psychiatric care, and no one to make sure they were taking their medications. They ended up on the street or in emergency rooms or jails. Pressured by families and advocates for the mentally ill, states began to offer ex-patients care in the community. In 1993, for the first time, states spent as much on community care as they did on hospital care, freeing hospital superintendents like Aidan Altenor of Haverford State to focus on preparing patients to leave.
An institutional setting is the most restrictive setting that a person can live in. The kinds of freedoms that you and I enjoy are not available to many people in the setting. As you walk around the community, having a dog come up and lick your hand, or having a cat rub against your leg. I mean, have you seen any cats around here? Or dogs around? I mean, the kinds of freedoms, the kinds of options, the kinds of choices that are available to people are much more available to them in communities.
Altenor says with therapy, drugs, and encouragement, almost everyone at Haverford, even those in the TV lounge, can at least live in a closely supervised group home. As proof, he points to his experience on a commission that in 1990 closed the only state mental institution in nearby Philadelphia by putting almost all of the 484 patients into some level of community care.
There are people for whom long-term care is needed in order to achieve the clinical stability that would be required before they leave. But a person doesn't have to stay in the hospital for 5, 10, 15, 20, 30, 40 years. You know, it's no longer, the view is that the hospital is no longer the home for many people.
You're going to talk yourself out of a job.
That would be a good thing to do.
Now, it's hard to say for sure whether community care works better than hospitalization. There are no national figures comparing the effectiveness of the two strategies. But at least in Philadelphia, the closing of the hospital was a success. All the former patients got some form of community care. In a survey, most said they're satisfied, and the local mental health association is pushing to get more hospitals closed. University of Pennsylvania economists say the Philadelphia closure worked because the state pumped money into community facilities, supervised homes, and the like. The cost per patient dropped from $97,000 a year to $67,000. But overall, there was little, if any, cost savings, because with more community mental illness care available, 20% more people in the Philadelphia area are getting it. And the state still has to maintain a backup hospital system. Mental illness advocates say getting people out of institutions isn't a financial matter, it's a humane matter. And they say it's doable.
I do the filing, bookkeeping of the records of all the businesses with the companies.
Mary Cromwell, who suffers from depression, has a part-time job at Alicia L's, a dress shop in downtown Frederick, Maryland. Cromwell never thought she could hold a job. She had been in and out of hospitals, and her rages and moods were making it hard for her family to take care of her. Then a therapist suggested The Way Station, a nonprofit community care center in Frederick. Cromwell is on medication and now lives with a brother. A van from The Way Station picks her up every day and brings her to the dress shop or to The Way Station's airy brick headquarters, where she can get individual or group therapy or participate in group activities like woodworking, gardening, or grooming lessons.
It's a wonderful feeling to be back out in the world again.
Like Cromwell, most of the 225 patients at the Way Station came back to the community from psychiatric hospitals. The Way Station was started in 1978 by the local mental health association after the business community complained about how people being discharged from state hospitals were winding up on the streets of Frederick. Way Station head Tina O'Rear says the place serves as a cornerstone for people who have no idea how to live outside of an institution.
It serves as an organizing framework for them. It provides necessary services, including treatment, rehabilitation, housing. Those are critical services for people who have a history of long-term mental illness.
Most of the people who spend their days at the Way Station or stay in its subsidized and supervised housing are on Medicaid, either because they were poor to start with or, if they weren't, their illnesses bankrupted them. A year at a state hospital costs about four times as much as a year at the Way Station, and whatever the financial situation in other states, Way Station head Tina O'Rear is convinced that community care costs less money. It's been popular with the Frederick business community, which raised some of the money for a new building. Still, the state has cut the Way Station's budget by $1 million. Where O'Rear had $5.6 million last year, she's got $4.6 million this year. So she eliminated some evening and weekend activities, and she anticipates more cuts.
In an environment of diminishing resources, people with serious mental illness are going up against rosy-cheeked school children in terms of funding priority, and they're a less attractive population. They're not as valued a population. People don't hold out as much hope that the services are really going to make that much of a difference, necessarily.
O'Rear sees another economic change coming. The state of Maryland, like many other states, is bringing in private insurers, basically managed care, to handle the psychiatric needs of Medicaid patients. What worries O'Rear is that these private insurers may not pay for community services, relegating patients to state hospitals or exacerbating an already existing problem. The one-third of the homeless who are mentally ill. Dr. Janelle Getches, a doctor with a nonprofit group called Healthcare for the Homeless, spends much of her time riding in a van equipped with a small doctor's office that searches for homeless people in Washington.
When someone gets on the van or comes into the shelter in the health service, for us, we're always thinking beyond whatever the reason is that they've come in. If they've come in, like tonight, if somebody has a sore throat or has some sort of other infection, we'll address that. But that's not what's mainly going through our mind. Is how can we help this person get off the street? If they're mentally ill, is there any way that we can help get them into a small group house, or can we get them on medication, or can we get them back up to see our psychiatrist who comes in to see them?
But more often than not, it doesn't work. Like with Pauline Perry, a woman of indeterminate age. She's sitting on a park bench in Washington, her belongings stuffed into two green garbage bags, her eyes watering as she talks about what's gone wrong in her life.
I put my head in the oven.
When'd you do that?
I think I was about 18, 19, 20 years old.
How come you did it?
I don't know. I was just afraid to be on my own with two children.
Workers with the Healthcare for the Homeless Project have approached Perry many times before, but she's refused help. They suspect she has severe depression. They know she has alcoholism. She's usually drunk. Project staffers say many of the women on the street use alcohol in a vain effort to quiet internal voices or muffle depression. Perry makes an appointment to see a psychiatrist the next day, but she doesn't show. Still, Janelle Getches doesn't give up.
The people who are resistant to any help, we just continue to be there and to stand there and to go back again and again and to drop by and to say how things are going, and that we may do that for several years and something may happen. And by that time, we will have formed enough of a trusting relationship that maybe at that crisis point, they'll be willing to let us help in some way.
With more money, Getches says, she'd get to people in the early stage of illness while it's more treatable, and she'd offer more community care. That's the trend in Pennsylvania, which has more than doubled what it spends on community care in the last 7 years. To Haverford State Hospital Superintendent Aidan Altnor, that's the way it should be.
Well, the government will never lose interest in that end of it. They can't.
Why?
The population will always be here. And if a failure to respond to the need will only increase a lot of the dispossessed and have people just roam in the streets. We can't lose an interest in that.
This is Joanne Silberner reporting.